And now, boys and girls, here is what you get when you join the Secret Squadron.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, brush, let's all lather, boys, whichever you've the notion.
50 cents for shaving cream, a dollar for the lotion.
And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
Somewhere along the line of your life, you've met them. You have come in contact with the Shadow People.
Let me tell you a true story. As a youth, I was fascinated by anything that was macabre and dark. In my spare time, I would research books on ghosts, hauntings, possessions, black magic, and the occult, and stay up late into the night with candles lit, delving into these topics. It was late one night around my 16th birthday that I just halfway finished a volume on Babylonian funerary practice and decided to turn in. I prepared for bed, closed the curtains, and extinguished the candles. For some unknown reason, my bedroom chamber seemed darker and unseasonably colder than usual. However, at that time, I thought nothing of it. As I lay with the bedclothes wrapped tightly around me, sleep seemed elusive, and I tossed back and forth for what seemed to be several hours. Subsequently, I began to feel as though I was occupying a space somewhere between waking and sleeping, in which my sense of the room around me was even more enhanced than subdued. A heavy sense of oppression surrounded me, and I became aware of another presence, or perhaps multiple presences, at various locations in the room. I attempted to rise from the bed to confront whoever it was that had invaded my space. However, I found myself paralyzed, unable to will even the slightest movement. Nevertheless, I could see, how this is possible I'm still uncertain, the entirety of the room and the nature of what was currently oppressing me. Standing on all sides of my bed, there was a series of shadowed figures that appeared to be wearing black robes with hooded cowls. The exact number was difficult to ascertain, however, I would estimate 7, perhaps more. They stood approximately 6 feet tall, and their features were completely obscured by the pitch black cloaks. One interesting aspect is the color of these robes was of such an intense black, blacker than any of the surroundings in the room, that it almost seemed to draw in the surrounding minimal light, and was blacker than anything I've ever seen before or since. I began to be aware of a deep humming sound, which may have been vocal, but it was difficult to ascertain if it was emanating from the surrounding creatures. The sense of oppression was growing more intense, and there was the additional feeling of unrelenting, impending doom. I genuinely felt that, whatever these beings were, that they had a vested interest in my destruction. Not just the elimination of my life, but the elimination of my existence on a soul level, if you believe in such a thing. The feeling reached a crescendo, along with the humming, and just when I felt it would never stop and I would never see the light of day again, I somehow managed to force a scream from deep within, lurching forward in bed with my arms outstretched. The figures had vanished. The room had returned to normalcy. However, I didn't sleep for the rest of the night, and greeted the rays of the morning sun with heavy-lidded eyes. This would be the beginning of a period of regular visitations, continuing for several months. Not every night, but many nights, always ending with the same startled jolt and remaining sleeplessness. Additionally, this period was accompanied by a spate of the worst personal luck and emotional instability. Car accidents, lost or broken items, explosive anger, and illness all followed these visitations. It was at the end of the third month that I began to try to find if there were any other reports of these entities and what might be done to combat them. The information wasn't easily found. However, I did find similar accounts in some books related to what was termed spiritual warfare, as well as from a skeptical perspective, and these were dismissed as episodes of sleep paralysis. Subsequently, I began to perform my own series of protection rituals, which I will not outline here, and the visitations became fewer and fewer. I've never had another episode where I have so distinctly and tangibly seen these entities. However, late at night, I do sometimes feel a similar presence, or catch something that seems to be a shadowy figure out of the corner of my eye. It may be hovering in the corner of the room, peering at me from the darkness of an open closet, or standing in the shadows of a great oak tree near my current residence. Did I truly free myself from these beings? Was it all just a delusion brought on by the right set of physical or biochemical elements? Or was it indeed a spiritual manifestation that potentially had dire consequences? What do I believe they are? I'm inclined to believe the latter, but also that these entities, whatever they are, seem to feed off negative emotional energy such as fear, anger, pain, loss, or grief. I'm also more inclined to believe that these creatures are a manifestation of our own psyche, which does not mean that they are any less real or a hallucination, and that the more that you fear, the more it potentially empowers them. However, dear listener, draw your own conclusions. Greetings, friends. It's been far too long. I know the weather is ghastly and the roads are treacherous, but I'm so glad you could join us this evening. Have a drink. Warm yourself by the fire. Let's discuss real and genuine tales of terror, the strange and bizarre, myths and legends, haunted histories and ghost sightings, cursed objects, cryptids and UFO abductions, secret societies, the occult, and dark conspiracy. Let's discuss all of these things, but first, please have a seat in the haunted chair.
We shall live on the earth, and man in the day shall not see us. They will know that we wait for our chance, that we walk with them. Only in the night, when the darkness grows together, and the forms of the shadow people are shaped from the blackness, will they see us. Then they will know that we are their companions. Look next to you. There, in the shadows.
In 1953, in the 44th installment of the Halls of Fantasy radio program, listeners were traumatized by an episode titled The Shadow People. While certainly not the first cultural reference to this phenomenon, it does serve as a point of interest to a modern resurgence of what people believe are actual sightings of these seemingly malevolent entities. The origin of these apparitions remains unclear, although it may be possible to tie them to myths and legends of reported sightings stretching back through antiquity. The characteristics and circumstances vary from manifestations and locations that appear to be a scene of a tragedy, such as a car accident or house fire, to seemingly unbidden appearances in the middle of the night with accompanying symptoms of paralysis and intense dread. In this episode, we will examine various manifestations, possible origins, and take a close look at the shadow on the wall, perhaps directly behind you. A
shadow people encounters. Reddit user Junior5150 writes, "When I was in 7th grade, I was standing at the bus stop early in the morning, still dark outside. The bus stop was somewhat under a street lamp. It would cast your shadow onto the house in front of the stop. I still, to this day, can't explain what I saw. I was standing there, normally the only person at this particular stop, when I see the shadow of a person walking towards me. I didn't think anything about it at first, but all of a sudden, while I am watching the shadow approach me, the shadow stops walking. Curious, I looked around for sights of someone and saw absolutely no one. I turn back to look at the shadow when it then drops to all four legs and takes off running full sprint right past me, then just disappears without a trace." User So Says Clucifer writes, "When I was in 6th grade, as I recall, about 11 years ago, I was invited to a barbecue at a local park by a fellow classmate. After a day of playing, as most kids tend to, it was time to go home. We were tasked with collecting all of my friends' younger brothers and sisters. There were 4 of us same-age kids actively looking for about 7 or so younger children. The park wasn't too large, and there was only one brick building, which served as the restrooms by the front. The kids weren't too hard to find, but halfway through the park we see a dark figure of what appears to be a small child. Thinking it was one of the siblings we were looking for, we naturally start running towards it. At this point, the figure is making a dash toward the back of the park, so we give chase and start yelling at the child to stop. As this dark, black-colored figure is reaching the end, the childlike figure turns white, starts running on all fours, runs up the tree like a cat, and uses the elevation to jump over the wall to the apartment complex. We run out of terror back to the front yard of the park. The figure was completely solid, and I have 3 eyewitnesses to back up my claim." A user with a deleted name writes, "I've seen shadow people my entire life, as far back as I can remember. One of my first memories of a house my family moved into when I was 9 was when I got in bed and started seeing the Hat Man standing near my closet. I was not asleep in the slightest. I had just climbed in bed and was sitting up. The last one I saw was about 2 years ago after I was sitting outside smoking on my porch. I live in a very quiet suburban street. I saw someone walk down the cross street to my left and disappear under a street lamp. It was weird because I could clearly see that it had the silhouette of a human, but it wasn't human because it was so dark. Then it walked near the street lamp, and then it was gone." What are the shadow people? Accounts vary, however, generally these are person-shaped, smoky, or pitch-black entities that are seen to move about in the dark, often abandoned or neglected spaces. These manifestations may be seen out of the corner of the eye, peeking around a corner, or swiftly passing through a wall. They may be seen while entirely alert, or in episodes that have been deemed sleep paralysis, in which the observer appears to be completely paralyzed and powerless to do anything against the vision, or a crushing sense of fear and dread. In other cases, the person may actually be touched or otherwise physically affected by these entities. Depending upon your view, there are various explanations for this phenomenon. In the late 19th century, the term nightmare was confined to the description of the modern definition of sleep paralysis, a disorder in which the body is temporarily paralyzed at the moment of falling asleep or waking. According to current medical explanation, it is a minor and common affliction that as much as 50% of the population claims to have experienced in their lifetime. These episodes are classified as parasomnias and can include vivid nightmares, night terrors, which are similar but they usually occur during sleep, and sleep walking or paralysis. The accepted medical explanation for sleep paralysis is that it occurs when the brain and the body are not in sync during the sleep process. During normal sleep, the brain sends a signal to the nervous system that relaxes the muscles, protecting our body from acting out while in the state of sleep. As the brain moves from a waking state, hypnopompic, to a sleeping state, hypnagogic, or back to waking, the order is given to start or end the paralysis. But when this happens at the wrong speed, problems can occur. If the body remains in this liminal state, it activates our limbic system, which is the center of emotional reaction, and precipitates fear and panic. Additionally, if the individual is in the depths of an unsettling dream, the feeling of dread is increased substantially due to transitional visual or auditory hallucinations that may carry over into the waking state. Experiences such as the nightmare is intimately linked to the myth of the incubus or succubus, tracing its roots from ancient Mesopotamia, 2000 before Common Era, to the Roman Empire. The word originates from the Latin to sit on, as the demon would sit on top of your chest while inducing horrifying dreams and physical paralysis. Additionally, the English word mare is from the Old Norse version of the incubus, the mara, which translates from the verb meron, or crusher. An excellent example of the mara, or a person with magical attributes who rides their victim out of pure wickedness, is Grendel. In the Anglo-Saxon tale Beowulf, the mara crushes and devours its prey in the dead of night. The tale shifted yet again in the following centuries, transforming into the old hag myth that is effectively utilized in Shakespeare's Queen Mab soliloquy from Romeo and Juliet. There is no current modern prescribed treatment for sleep paralysis. However, suggestions include maintaining a regular sleep schedule. This is a far cry from earlier recommended treatment, such as first mentioned by Byzantine physician Paulus Agenita in the 7th century. Paulus dictates that the most common way to treat the ailment was through bleeding, drastic purgatives, and friction of the extremities. Barring this, the cupping and scarification of the throat, a shaved head, and a restricted diet would do the trick. The era of Christianity, of course, associated the ailment to demonic possession, and the afflicted were treated with exorcism and prayer. But toward the Age of Enlightenment, demons abated, and medical care moved toward a more modern understanding. At least, for some. Perhaps the most famous and ubiquitous shadow person encounter is that of the Hat Man, a tall shadow figure that appears to be wearing a long trench coat and hat. The style of hat seems to vary, from wide-brimmed cowboy, to bowler, to top hat, with the most common being a fedora right out of a film noir. Some witnesses report him as having glowing red eyes, and when he is seen, if other shadows appear, he gives the sense that he is somehow in charge. Many people who have seen the Hat Man claim that they see him hovering above them while they are in bed, or others, while wide awake, see him before a major traumatic event. Filmmaker Wes Craven was inspired by accounts of the Hat Man when he created his iconic horror film villain Freddy Krueger in the Nightmare on Elm Street series. He came upon an article in the LA Times in the early 80s about Asian men who were literally dying from nightmares and became intrigued. One man told his parents that he refused to go to sleep, believing that he would die once he shut his eyes, and forced himself to stay awake for 2 days. His family later found him screaming and throwing a violent fit in bed before suddenly dying. In the book Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy, Craven is quoted as saying, "It literally brought tears to my eyes because here's a guy who has a vision that's accurate, but it's so unusual that it seems like it's part of some madness. This led Craven to pose the question, what if someone in the man's dream had killed him? And thus a horror icon was born. Subsequently, perhaps to lend further theatrics, as he was a writer and a showman, Craven appeared to express real concern that, through the popularity of the nightmare movies, he had actually funneled the emotional power of thousands of viewers of the films and created an actual dark entity. This concept was explored in the 1994 movie Wes Craven's New Nightmare, in which the cast of the previous films, playing themselves, are confronted with a real manifestation of the character known as Freddy Krueger. This idea has genuine occult roots in the concept of the creation of a tulpa, or thought form, in which collective mental or emotional energy can be harnessed and concentrated to create an individual sentient being that is independent of the original source. It is clear that Freddy Krueger, along with the Hat Man, have become powerful, enduring archetypes for sinister darkness. Filling the conscious mind with ideal conceptions is a characteristic of Western theosophy, but not the confrontation with the shadow and the world of darkness. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. The Philosophical Tree, 1945, by Carl Jung. It is impossible to discuss the concept of the shadow people without discussing Carl Jung and his model of the psyche. In this model, various personified structures exist that interact with one another in our inner world. The persona and the anima, animus, are relational, with the persona relating to the external world and the anima, animus, to the internal world. The ego stands alongside the shadow, and these two components are imperative to the functioning of our identity. Jung spent his career with a deep interest in the shadow, and in the procedure for assimilating the thing a person has no wish to be. He recognized that the failure to deal with and acknowledge shadow elements is often at the core of individual or group problems, often fueling prejudice or what is considered to be deviant behavior. According to author Connie Zweig, the shadow goes by many familiar names: the disowned self, the lower self, the dark twin or brother in the Bible and myth, the double, repressed self, alter ego, or the id. When we come face to face with our darker side, we use metaphors to describe these shadow encounters: meeting our demons, wrestling with the devil, descent into the underworld, dark night of the soul, or midlife crisis. Jung identified the persona as what oneself, as well as others, thinks one is, whereas the shadow is that hidden, repressed, for the most part inferior and guilt-laden personality, whose ultimate ramifications reach back into the realm of our animal ancestors. If it has been believed hitherto that the human shadow was the source of evil, it can now be ascertained on closer investigation that the unconscious man, that is, his shadow, does not only consist of morally reprehensible tendencies, but also displays a number of good qualities, such as normal instincts, appropriate reactions, realistic insights, creative impulses, etc. Essentially, the shadow contains various characteristics that, if not recognized and owned, evince a state of poverty in the personality and facilitate a breakdown of connectedness with others. Just one example includes a person who believes that to be assertive is to be selfish, so he proceeds through life being pushed around by others, which facilitates resentment and guilt. As long as the issue is not addressed, these feelings grow stronger, which only further feeds the shadow. Another example could be a person who struggles with a deviant sexual urge, never acts on it, and denies it, even at the point of denying it to themselves, thus causing strain, stress, conflict, and imbalance. The ideal outcome here is not to give in to these impulses, but to recognize and integrate this part of themselves, finding productive or cathartic ways to channel those impulses without guilt or self-loathing. A final example would be someone with anger control issues, who is constantly flying off the handle, but when confronted with the issue, they deny it, or only express their darkness behind closed doors. Yet again, the desired outcome is a balance point, where one does not deny these characteristics, but it is able to maintain control and act appropriately according to societal norms. Ironically, acceptance of the shadow is what removes some of its destructive power. Further shadow people encounters. A Reddit user with a deleted name states, "I saw a shadow person once. I had spent the night in an abandoned flour mill with some friends, and towards dawn I woke up, and there was a dark, darker than regular shadow, figure sitting on a rafter above and in front of me. This shadow was in the shape of a human, with one leg bent on the rafter, and the other one dangling and swinging back and forth. It was like it was watching us sleep, and sort of evaporated after a few seconds of me watching it." User Freya Foxy Fox states, "My old house was certainly haunted by multiple entities, but the one that freaked me out the most was the shadow figure that lived in my basement. After seeing it for the first time, I refused to go down in my basement after dark, and started going down only for brief periods of time during the day to do the laundry. Let's just say the laundry didn't get done as often as it should have. The first time I saw it, I was turned around folding clothes on the dryer, my back to the furnace, and I felt like something was watching me. I turned slightly, and in my periphery I saw something human-like standing in front of the furnace. I've never run as fast as I did that day up the stairs. The next time I noticed it, it was in the same spot, and I had turned back around after changing laundry from the washer to the dryer. It appeared to be a tall figure, probably over 6 feet tall, and it almost looked like it was holding something in its hand, like a spear, pole, or walking stick. I again ran faster than the dickens up the stairs. Every time thereafter, I would spend as little time in the basement as possible. I felt it was angry. Not necessarily angry with me for something that was my fault, but angry that I was there, or that my family lived there. I had paranormal investigators come to the house that claimed sight of him also, but could never capture any evidence of him. I just had a feeling it was male, because of the stature, and just a weird vibe that I had. Nonetheless, I do not live there anymore, and have not noticed shadow figures in my new home, although I do get strange feelings as if I'm being watched from time to time." The Elegant Bat writes, "I think I had an encounter with one about 8 years ago. I was asleep in a room with my father, sleeping on the floor. I was on the bed. I woke up to see a dark figure hover on the side of the bed, and I thought it was my dad trying to scare me because it's something we used to do to each other. I called out to him, and I heard his voice come from the floor where I had last seen him. I started to panic, realizing that it wasn't him who was standing near me. I felt like it was making eye contact, but it had no facial features." Draw Three Kings writes, "The reason that shadow people do not appear to have any facial features is due to an early human developmental trait. Infants learn to trust by seeing and recognizing familiar faces, bonding. That is one way they know how to feel safe. Shadow people, however, are the embodiment of sinister tidings. Whether this appearance is intentional by them, or that a shadowy figure is all that we are able to process, is unknown." Well, it seems that the rain has abated for now, and the road should be safe to travel. If you must go, please promise to visit us again soon. Stay in touch with us for frequent updates, more real tales of the supernatural and horrifying, and the chance for you, dear listener, to possibly own a piece of paranormal history. Till we meet again, we will save you a seat in the haunted chairs.